This thing's on? Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Mikhail Hussain. I'm the President and the CEO for the United Tax Workers of San Diego. First, I would like to congratulate Ms. Gomez for this position. You know, UTWSD is proud of you, and we're willing to work with you. You and your new agents, which I have acknowledged, you know, they opened the lift the gap for tax opportunity a couple of years ago. So welcome, and we've been, you know, for your appointee for this position. Second, one thing I want to mention about regarding about tax industry, we had an issue. You know, we lift the cap a couple of years ago. Our job is mainly to advocate on behalf of the difference between the Uber and Lyft and TNC and how we can regulate. It took us so long. Along the line, we lost about 400+ taxis in the city of San Diego, so about 500. So looking that, we have only now 800. So I know that there's a new administration, taxi administration, and they call us back in January 30th this year, ad hoc meeting, to talk about, only about insurance, how we can go on this situation. So as you know that the insurance, we have $1 million. No other industry, in taxi industry, have $1 million insurance through the state. And so we want to thank about the tax administration, Mr. Nelson, for his effort to bring people together. But at the same time, now we feel like there's urgency. We reach out some of the city council, and I know that the timeline, we have an issue right now. Insurance, we have to renew the insurance within this month, 22nd of the month, and we need at least 4,000 plus. And drivers, I know that for sure, and most people, they are here, some of the industry member, we're gonna lose another 400 taxis next month or so. So that will leave us only 300 or 400. That's the reality. So I'm here today on behalf of the taxi driver city of San Diego to this board to weigh in and talk to your lawyer so you guys can communicate the lawyer for the city council so to get something done right away on the 22nd if it's possible. So that's my request today, because if you don't act now, for sure we are not going to have taxi industry within a year or so. So that's why I'm here today on behalf of the taxi driver city of San Diego. We're the only non-profit union driven organization advocating on behalf of taxi driver city of San Diego. So with that being said, you know, thank you for your time. I look forward to work your company, your organization, and thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Have a nice
thank day. You so much. And the board is looking into it, by the way. Up next, Nancy Vu, and then after her is Anthony Palmieri.
Good morning. Good morning, and congratulations on your appointment. I had earlier given my opinion about the new changes in scheduling at the SANDEC community engagement meetings regarding the search for the new director, since I believe that these scheduling issues go beyond MTS. However, I will reiterate my points here, where they might have more influence on the actions of MTS as a local agency that might actually care about keeping its services afloat. I've been living in Mira Mesa for almost a decade now, and over that time, I have seen services continually cut on the local lines, such as the 31 and the 964, as well as the longer route of the 20, which serve the several communities between Rancho Bernardo and downtown San Diego. Since Monday, 2 weeks ago, the 20 no longer serves these communities, including Mira Mesa and Kernan Mesa, whose populations are mostly working and middle class. The excuse I have been given is that the route was streamlined because of the numerous complaints made about its timeliness. But the so-called solution to complaints about timeliness was not to increase service, which would have been the logical, service-oriented decision, but to actually decrease service, cutting out the portion of the route that runs through eastern Kearny Mesa, down Kearny Villa Road, and down Black Mountain Road, thereby turning the 20 into a much poorer cousin to the 235, which is already an express route, making far fewer stops between Escondido and downtown San Diego. It appears to me that the fate of the 20 route is dire, for in reducing service, fewer riders will have the opportunity to use it. According to decision makers at MTS, and thereby, and by their influence, SANDAG, the 20 is likely to be eliminated altogether. Be eliminated altogether, which would be a terrible, terrible decision, as it would eliminate transit service to several working and middle-class communities between Escondido and downtown. At a time when MTS appears to be clamoring for customers, the plan ought not to be to decrease services, but to expand them, thereby giving residents and visitors alike reasons to use transit, as opposed to treating existing riders like second-class citizens who only deserve what service is only given to them begrudgingly. Indeed, if San Diego wishes to be accepted as the world-class city it claims to be, its decision makers need to provide the city services that create world-class cities, not by beating its chest and declaring it, making a mockery of itself by attempting to merely talk the talk, but being a world-class city by walking the walk. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Anthony Palmieri.
Good morning. Madam Chairman, do I have the 6 minutes of my cohort?
Oh, I see that you do have time seated. I'll give 5 minutes total.
For both. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I have been away from this board for over a year, and I recognize a few faces, and most of your faces I do not know. I am the owner of Yellow Radio Service and the owner of Yellow Cab in San Diego and Yellow Cab up in Oceanside going from Del Mar North. I have never begged in my life. I've spoken to God many times, but I have never begged, and I am begging. I'm begging from a financial standpoint, and Mr. McKell that spoke before me, we're on the same page. So this is not a owner versus a driver. We're on the same page. Our insurance runs out on February 22nd. We now pay, I can tell you what we pay, $4,400 per taxi cab for $1 million worth of insurance. We got an extension. They would only give us a 45-day extension, but we had to pay in full. So between today and tomorrow, we have to come up for each taxi cab, but not me, everybody, or every taxi cab in the city, American, Orange, Red, you name it, Purple, Green, whatever the company is, they got to come up with $480 per cab in the hands of the agent by tomorrow to buy until April 5th. April 5th, we have to have a new policy. If nothing is done by April 5th, most of these taxi cabs, I think a higher number than Mr. McKell said, is going to be out of business. We're just closing down our doors. We can't stay open. I'm going to give you my numbers. I'm going from 1,800 calls a day. I'm down to 700 calls a day. I'm getting people from other companies coming to me. I'm telling them no because I can't feed the ones I have, let alone take new taxi cabs in. If I don't renew, if nothing happens here, then the insurance will go up by $1,200. So instead of, because it's going to be dollar one coverage for $1 million, I'm going from $44 to approximately $5,600 per cab. I'm out of business. There's no decision for me to make. I can't keep my doors open. I only have 13 people. I had 65 people. I'm down to 13 people in my property. I took my bottom floor and I sublet it. I am begging you that we're on a time structure. We're on a time structure for two things. One is to get this done as soon as possible, and two, to lower. And I have to say this. And first of all, I want to thank MTS staff. They have done everything to help us, but they still have to work through you, and then I'm not sure what has to go to
one
the city.
One last sentence, sir. Your time has expired.
Okay.
Oh, there's two more minutes. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. when we went from 350,000 up to a million, it was done at the MTS level. Going from a million back down to 350, now they're telling me that the city has to get involved. And I don't mind the city getting involved. I really don't. It's just a question of how quick the city can get everything moving. And getting anything done with the city normally takes time. I am not the type of, I ask permission. I go by the rules. Whatever the rules are, I ask permission. I don't come up and ask for forgiveness because I did it. And then you get mad at me, so I say, I'm sorry. And I'll say two more Hail Marys, and you'll let me off the hook. It doesn't work that way. I am telling you that we will be, honestly, and all of you, and people know how to reach me, you're more than welcome to come over to my company, and I'll show you how bad it is. If you ask your own staff, how many MTS medallions have been handed in so that they don't have to pay insurance and they don't have to pay dues, you got more now than you ever have. And I think Mikel said it right. We opened up the city, and we have less cabs now than we did before we opened up the city. So it shows that we're going to be out of business. So I really need your help. I'm hoping that there's a fast track here. This is, Mr. Jablonski, this is serious for me and for the taxi cab industry, because I'm not sure what the city would do without a taxi cab. I don't think you're going to have 400 cabs when this is over. I think you're going to have a lot less than that, and they can't cover it. And we need to get uniform. We, as I sit on this board, not everyone, and I'm not going to mention the cities, not every city sitting on this board has the same insurance as $1 million. They have much less, much, much less. But they're here voting on my $1 million. So keep that in mind. And thank you very much for your time, and I beg of you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, and our council is going to speak to you.
Yeah, so I just wanted, this is not on the agenda, so we can't have a board discussion, but just since this seems to be a big issue, I want everyone to understand we are working on it. The legal procedural issue that we are working with the City of San Diego to see, you know, how we can work it, is it under our contract with them? They've retained the right for fundamental policy decisions. And while before, when the insurance was limits were raised with everyone in favor, that's a benefit to the public, it's not necessarily a fundamental policy question that needs to go to the city. But now, when you're potentially lowering the limits, and that's an issue where it would have an impact on members of the public, we've interpreted for the last several years that that would be a fundamental policy decision that needs to go to the city. What process it has to go through to the city is up to the city. And we are working on it, trying to figure out what we can do, and our staff is working to help you prepare a record to support a change. So I just want everyone to know that we're working on it, we're exploring what our options are, and you know, we're aware of the time issues.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We hear you. Up next, Deb, and I can't make the handwriting for the last name, so I apologize.
Good morning, Deb McKissack. I'm here to share some community issues with MTS Access, being hopeful that improvements can be made. In 2012, my mother became a client of MTS Access and a client of the Neighborhood House Senior Citizen Center. In 2013, MTS suggested that we become part of their subscription because a number of the elders and the disabled that attended the center lived in the general area. And my understanding was with a subscription that there could have been a dedicated bus whereby these folks could, in a timely manner, be returned to their homes. Overall, the service has been pretty good, but when it's not good, it's very not good. On February the 2nd, again, my mother's subscription was an 8 a.m. pickup with a 2 p.m. return. On February the 2nd, again, for a 2 p.m. return, my mother was returned almost 2 hours from that time. There are people on the bus at are elderly, that are disabled, and I think we need to remember that these folks have restroom issues, they have medication issues, and there needs to be a timely travel time. I wanted to make sure that I understood what this board looked like, so I brought it up on the system, and it was sort of surprising to me that there didn't seem to be a community representative on the board. But someone from MTS Access, I spoke with them this morning, and I understand that there is an ASAC committee, and that's where community persons can become involved. So I'd like to remind MTS Access that a lot of their riders, again, are elderly, they're disabled, they have bathroom issues, they have medication issues, and it would be really, really nice that they had decent travel times. Thank you.
Up next, Mr. Padilla, you have 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Steve Padilla here in my private capacity on behalf of Grand Central West LLC, returning to you after a number of months to a new board and some new, I think, refreshing board leadership on the ongoing matter concerning Grand Central West and the McDonald's building at 727 East San Ysidro Boulevard, which unfortunately in the last few years devolved into a legal conflict that is now the subject of litigation between MTS and my client, but I'm not here to speak to those legal issues. I am here to address the underlying policy issues and to respectfully submit that this board should take a fresh look at this issue. The number one and overarching job one for MTS is to serve the traveling public, is to serve your passengers. It is with respect to abide by the principles contained in your very own Designing for Transit manual, the policies that you have had on your books for many years prior to this conflict that talk about transit-oriented development, maximizing access by the traveling public, most importantly those that are transit dependent, to be able to access multiple modes of travel, to move between fixed rail and transit and bus, to basically centralize those services, to decentralize the conflicts between modes, and most of all, to make sure that people can safely access the infrastructure and the services that MTS provides. In the past, this agency has looked at this issue primarily in terms, frankly, of a legal conflict, an issue of trespass. You have treated the intercity bus terminal property, which is MTS property, which you purchased for multiple millions of dollars and have sunk much more in unreturned investment in since, not to the benefit of the traveling public. You have chosen in the past to treat this as a private asset. This is public land. The inner city bus terminal rests on public land purchased with public dollars for the purpose of benefiting the traveling public. In this particular location, what's more, it serves an underserved community, a community of color, a community where there is an exorbitant number of transit dependent travelers, many of whom are elderly, many of whom have handicaps, and many of whom have no other means of transportation and often laden with baggage. What many of you may not be aware of is that for many years prior to this conflict, this agency sought to work collaboratively with the owners of the McDonald's building. Your prior planning, to the extent that you entered into MOUs and you sought funding and you even had the former mayor of San Diego speaking with their corporate representatives, you invested time and money into working collaboratively with the owners of this building in order to create a situation where that property was integrated with the inner city bus terminal in order to carry out your responsibility to provide direct access, safe access, to defuse mode conflicts, to provide safe access to that terminal. But unfortunately, in recent years, you have pursued a policy that has treated that bus terminal as if it were private property. And your policy, with all due respect, is harming the traveling public. What's more is you have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in this litigation. And I would respectfully ask all of you to re-examine and ask the question, what is the policy objective here? What are we trying to achieve? I really think that the policy of MTS should be that in every case where possible, that you should treat adjoining property owners, the local community, and local businesses as potential collaborators and not as potential competitors. As potential collaborators and not as potential competitors, and to find ways to work collaboratively to produce results that benefit the traveling public. Continuing to pursue this conflict, and again, with due respect, the legal position of which has frankly changed drastically and not in this agency's favor in recent rulings, but I will leave that to our legal team to convey to you through your counsel. This is not a good situation, folks. This is not serving the public. This is not living up to your mandate to serve them. This is not simply a matter of somebody cut a hole in their wall and is walking on your grass. It's the people's grass. It's the people's property purchased with their money for their benefit. You should not be treating that as if it were private property. You should be trying to work with your adjoining property owners in every location where you look to build and expand TOD. This is a waste of public funds. It is damaging your constituents. I look to see many new faces, many of whom I know and have worked with in years past that I have great respect for on this board, and certainly some great new leadership. I urge you with all respect to please re-examine this case, and let's find a situation that is a win-win for everyone. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
And thank you. And just for the record, I know that Ms. Saf brought it to my attention. The public comment is for five, but it's up to me to do all of them. I'm choosing to just finish all public comment. That way the public is not waiting for us. So we have three more. So just please bear with me. Up next is Zoe Vandenberg. And then after that, Abe Antalolo.
Good morning. My name is Zoe Vandenberg. I recently have moved here to San Diego. I work for the Defense Information Services Agency as a cybersecurity manager. I'm having some difficulties with the transit enforcement every time I interact with them when I'm on the trolley. And it's starting to get to the point where even though I have complained many times to different sergeants or call in, it got to the point where now it's so frustrating. I don't like the way I'm being treated. My other transgender individuals on who use trolley are also having some difficulties. I think diversity and inclusion should be a part of some training here. It's getting bad to where we're actually thinking about maybe suing over in a situation that happened about a month ago.
If you can just please speak to the mic.
Oh, sorry. So you know we're at that point now. We're frustrated with how we're getting our responses from transit enforcement. I don't know how procedures work here with the board versus the, interacting with them or recommendations made by the board to them. But, you know, it's at the point now where we're frustrated. I even have to deal with them every day. It's at the point now where I dislike interacting with them. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Abebe?
Good morning. My name is Abebe Antalo. I was a lease cab driver for over 15 years. We pushed the city to lift the cap on the taxi permits. In 2014, we succeeded. I am now an owner-operator, but I don't make any money from the taxi service I provide to pay my taxi cab finance, business insurance, MTS regulatory, and other fees. I am calling the city elected officials to reform its taxi business policy, the same as Uber and Lyft, since we are providing the same service. It is urgent, otherwise we will be wiped out and we die. We are unfairly treated by taxi insurance in the name of policy, public safety of the scare policy tactics. Insurance and MTS regulatory fees become very expensive when there is no market. Therefore, we cab drivers oppose this unfair business treat that it is imposed on taxi service only. We request to bring the insurance down from $1 million to $300,000 and MTS fees from $600 to $300 if you wanna keep us in business. Many cities excess taxi automobile liability insurance have a minimum coverage and rate A minus or better B plus plus must have a minimum of $300,000. Why not in San Diego? Please go to mynewmarket.com or go to Google Insurance Journals for the facts. Drivers struggle for economic survival. Our fight is for fairness. It's a human rights fight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abebe. Up next and last, Mr. Tony Wessel.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of this board. My name is Tony Wessel with USA Cab. I'm here before you pleading with this board to focus on an urgent economic issue that the taxi industry needs addressed with urgency. For the last 26 years, by pooling our resources, we formed an association to purchase group insurance to make it more affordable to our members. About 5 years ago, the minimum standards of insurance were raised from $350,000 per vehicle to $1 million without any consideration to actuary data or justifiable evidence. We have been doing all the right things, but our regulatory standards are expensive. I don't think the intent of government was to put us at jeopardy with the current regulations that we have to adhere to. Currently, our single insurance option has quoted us a higher insurance premium that is not realistic to our marketplace. Government needs to act to put us in a more competitive level. Some modes are being given more leniency. All assets should be regarded as valuable to our city. Our city cannot afford to lose business that enriches our community with options of economic benefits. All business matters. Our loss is your loss. Please act. Thank you for your time, and God bless you, and we all need more blessings. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Wessel. Moving on to the consent item, are there any items from the board or audience of request to pull? I see none.
Yes.
Oh, David?
I wish to pull item, I believe it was 14 and 17. And just want to comment on item six. The backup of item six has some information about the action that the board is taking. I think it's important to note that there is in this backup material that's publicly available some performance measures that were used to evaluate Mr. Jablonski's contract. I would also like to just acknowledge the fact that not only is this an improvement from previous years in terms of measurements and goals that are set, but that we look forward in this year to establish some more performance measures that we can utilize on a regular basis to measure performance from the CEO. So I just want to make that comment. But with that, I'd move the balance of the consent agenda with the exceptions of items 14 and 17.
Thank you. We do have a second by Ms. Saff, Councilmember Saff. All those in favor, say aye. Against? The item stands adopted unanimously, pulling item 14 and 17. Moving on to closed session. So we will be adjourned. Should we do item 14? Okay. All right. So we're going to move on to item 14, which is hazardous waste and trauma scene cleanup services. We have staff that can speak to that.
May I just ask some questions maybe to expedite this process?
Yeah.
For staff, and I don't know who is the staff working on this. I'm interested in knowing, first of all, I think I know what the trauma scene cleanup services are. I'm assuming that has to do with accidents that might occur, but if I'm wrong, I'd like to be corrected on that. And then I'm trying to understand how much is actually going to be paid on this contract. Is it more of an on-call contract as incidents occur, or does the base year amount is the amount that will be paid regardless of incidents that occur?
Good morning. This is my name is Claudine. I'm the procurement officer for this contract. The hazardous waste material will be based on an as-needed basis, and then the trauma scene cleanup will be also based on an as-needed basis in case there are accidents on the trolley lines.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate you answering those questions. That's all I had. I'd move the item. Aye.
Item stands unanimous. Moving on to item 17, vehicle advertising services.
So, again, if I can just jump in to try to expedite this. I recall, and I want to be correct, that last month we had a similar item, and I'm just trying to understand because there's no real context in the report as to what happened with the previous contractor that we approved.
Yeah, we did come to before the board last month to have a contract approved for Outfront Media. After the board meeting, the negotiations between us and Outfront broke down and they withdrew their proposal, and so we were asking for an extension on the existing contractor while we negotiate with the second highest ranked firm and establish a contract with them that we'll bring to the board for approval.
And the extension is with the current and also the same Outfront Media that is no longer, no. What is the current provider?
Michael Allen and Associates.
Okay.
And the extension's with them.
And you think it's gonna take an entire year to figure out who our next provider will be, or?
No, part of that extension timeframe includes a transition period between the contractors,
okay,
because you have one organization that has to ramp up commercial sales and one that has existing contracts that they need to finish.
Okay, thank you. Move the item.
Thank you. I believe Vice Chair Rios has a question as well.
I do. Thank you very much. I noticed in the background information that it stated that although the Outfront Media could not come to an agreement with us on this item, that the staff is still engaged with the second highest ranked proposal, Clear Channel. So how do we move forward with Michael Allen and Associates if we're still in agreement with another company? Or not in agreement, but engagement.
If I understand your question correctly, you're asking how we proceed with Michael Allen Associates.
Yes.
There's current service that's being provided, advertising service. There's wraps on the bus and the trolleys that need to be maintained for vandalism. There's also revenue opportunities during the time period while we're negotiating with Clear Channel and Associates. So we don't want to miss out on any revenue opportunities, or we don't want to have any of the wraps or anything damaged in accidents or through vandalism go unrepaired. And so our extension with Michael Allen will essentially allow us to maintain operation and current status of the advertising program while we negotiate and transition to the new contractor.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, we do have a motion by Mr. Councilmember Alvarez.
Yeah, I make the motion. The last time I stated it'd be great if there could be some sort of PSA component to the contract. I don't want to derail or prolong it any longer, but as you're negotiating, if that's of interest to the company, it would be good for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have a motion by Councilmember Alvarez? Second, I believe, by Mr. Hall. Thank you. All those in favor, please vote. Aye. Item moves forward, unanimous. Thank you so much. And now moving on to closed session, please. Okay. So we'll be back, folks. Thank you so much for hanging on, public. We're going to call the meeting back to order. So if I can have board members please take a seat. Yes, why don't we go ahead and report out from closed session.
So in closed session, item number 24A, closed session conference with labor negotiators, the board received a report and gave instructions to negotiators. And item number 24B, closed session conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation, the board received a report and gave instructions to counsel.
Thank you, Karen. Moving on to... There are no notice public hearings. We're going to have a discussion item. Item 30, turn it to staff for the presentation.
Good morning. I'm Sharon Cooney. I'm the chief of staff here at the agency. This is Tim Allison. He's with our manager of real estate, Manny Guadarrama, who is our chief of police, and then Derek Jackson, who is our head of our transit security. So I wanted to just run through why we're bringing this in open session. This is a contract agreement with Urban Corps for on-call homeless encampment cleanup services. That's the action item we'll be asking, but we're also going to be giving you a report on the efforts that we're making for encampment cleanup within our right-of-way, and also the collaborations we're having with the other agencies and cities that we serve. So what's the need? MTS right-of-way and stations are really impacted frequently by homeless encampments. This is nothing new. We've always had this as something that we have to take care of. The number of trespasses and amount of debris really does vary, but it's been growing steadily in recent years. We do have staff who helps take care of this as well, but we have a need for a contractor to assist staff in these efforts. Our existing contract capacity has been fully expended, so we had to go out to bid to get another contract. And we've been notified by the various agencies that we've been working with that it is our responsibility to do these cleanups and that they're going to be enforcing quite a bit more than they have in the past. So just as an example, in the San Diego River, where we have a significant amount of property, these are just some of the examples of some of the cleanup efforts that we've been making. February 15th and 18th, we took out 7 tons of material. July 7th, 3 tons. December 27th, 5 tons. You can look already in the year 2018 how much we've been taking out of the San Diego River. And we have a pending cleanup effort that we'll be doing around an island that we own within the river. So this is just an ongoing thing, and these numbers don't really reflect all of the cleanups that we do because this is just what our right-of-way, our real estate division is using the contract for. We also have about $12,000 worth of cleanup on the trolley side, and they've been taking out quite a bit of tonnage as well on existing right-of-way near the train tracks. So a lot of resources internally and externally are going into this effort, transit security, code compliance. The land management staff has to get down there. They put up notices to say, we're going to be cleaning out this area. Please remove your items. We have trolley facilities, as I mentioned. We have a partnership with the San Diego River Park Foundation, and they actually, through an agreement with us, will offer us volunteers. On some of these efforts, they'll give us 20, 30 volunteers who go in and help us clean up. And then law enforcement. We always have to include law enforcement. A lot of times, especially in the San Diego River, we've found that there's quite a bit of illegal activity occurring, and that they would like to be involved so that nobody gets harmed during these cleanups. So the procurement, we have a current contract with Aztec Landscaping, and as I mentioned, we needed to bid the work again because we expended the entire authorization of the contract. Urban Core was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. A number of you probably know them because your cities use them. This is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that assists young adults to gain training. I do believe there was going to be someone from Urban Core here if there's any questions about their organization. But this contract is for 3 years. It'll be on call, includes labor, materials, and equipment, and then it's not to exceed $139,000. So I did want to talk about the collaboration with other agencies. As I mentioned, that we've been notified that there will be zero tolerance for encampments within these property areas. And so, for instance, we met with the city of San Diego in December, with the mayor of San Diego himself, as well as San Diego Police Department and other stakeholders to address encampments within the river, San Diego River. We also have ongoing actions between us and the city personnel in order to get these cleanups moving, especially in the river. The County of San Diego is also being proactive, and we've most recently in January had an interagency meeting that they set up. This included Dr. Wooten as well as some others who are engaged in the hepatitis A outbreak response. They indicated that the new norm will be very active encampment cleanups. In order to make sure that we are not negatively impacting public health or public safety. And we'll continue to collaborate. In the unincorporated area, we'll show you something about that we own a rather large mitigation site in Lakeside. So this is just a slide to explain how the extent of some of our enforcement efforts. 23, we issued a number of citations. This is all things that we actually report to you during the security reports that we give you. So with that, I'm going to move to the San Diego River to start showing you some of the impacts of the encampments, and Tim's going to talk to you about this.
Let me orient you to this slide. You can see that Interstate 8 is on the very bottom of the slide. The Riverwalk Golf Course is on the upper right-hand side of the slide, and you can see the trolley tracks, Mission Valley West, going through basically the top third of the slide. The yellow area is a 45-acre mitigation site that we acquired for impacts during the Mission Valley West project in the 90s. It's by far our largest site that we have. It is primarily wetlands with open water habitat. You can see in the middle of the slide where it says San Diego River, there's a couple of islands that are out there as well that were created during the mitigation site construction. The area in blue is where the activity of encampments happens on our property. It is a continuation throughout the river valley, but this is where MTS gets involved in encampment cleanups. Go to the next slide. So this slide is a screenshot of a GIS platform that the San Diego River Park Foundation maintains. It's a very telling slide, and it's anyone can go to this website and look at the overall river valley. This is just a screenshot of our area that I took. It is updated periodically. The San Diego River Park Foundation, they go out and do surveys of different activity that's going on in the river. And this slide shows in yellow our property compared to the others. So if you see, there are three different types of dots on there, if you can make them out. The yellow dots are encampment activity that are no longer there. They've been cleaned up. The green dots are encampment activities that no longer are occupied. and there are three purple dots that have occupied encampments. Now, this was in January, so gives you an idea of the activity that's been going on there. Next slide. So this slide takes out those yellow dots, and MTS, in collaboration with all of the different folks that Sharon mentioned, we've been working on cleaning up these locations. The area to the north of the open water, all those green dots have been cleaned up already, and we're working on the dots that are on the right-hand side of this slide, and we're getting pretty close. So you can see that this is a representation of the type of activity that happens when we go out and do the cleanups. The code enforcement and San Diego Police Department go out and they do the surveys of active encampments. And once the active encampments have been identified, then we will coordinate effort to go out and do a cleanup. So the area in red, red square and red oval, that was one cleanup that was done. The area in yellow and blue are very similar to the types of activities that happen when we go out and do a cleanup. And those represent some of those numbers that were given to you previously in the previous slides of the number of tonnage and dollar values that we've put out there.
So we're just gonna run through these slides rather quickly, but we are gonna have a couple comments to make, so.
Yeah, the illegal activity and illegal lodging in the river has been going on for a number of years. In late 2002 to 2005, I was assigned as a lieutenant to Western Division. We had a team that went in the river several nights a week and really didn't focus on the illegal lodging, but more about the illegal criminal activity. As you'll see, the majority of the people that live in the river are not your typical homeless people. They're much more entrenched. I'd like to say 100%, but I would say to safely say 95% of the people that are living down there are using methamphetamine or heroin. They create havoc in the communities in that area because they rely on stealing property to maintain their drug habits. So you just saw all those bicycles. The one first hut that you saw was a chop shop that was actually set up as a chop shop, just like a car chop shop would be, except it was for bicycles. And that pile of bicycles were the leftover parts from the thefts there. I'm going to let Dennis kind of talk a little bit more about the photos. Dennis is known as Captain Jackson, works for our contract security company. He is truly probably the biggest expert in the river because he goes in the river once or twice every single week. In fact, last year in 2017, we had 87 illegal encampment details that we did on our property. So, Captain Jackson, if you want to just kind of talk about some of the photos, and you'll see all these items are stolen property.
These are coming items that they steal from the local condos and apartments near the golf course area in Mission Valley. What you don't see in the photo is directly behind that is a kitchen with barbecue grills. I'm not talking regular grills, but expensive gas barbecue grills and things that were stolen from apartments. And there's two encampments directly behind there, and they're completely camouflaged. You can't see them, but they're exceptionally large encampments that we had to clear out and remove everything. This is part of a bicycle chop shop. It's only maybe 25 yards from the golf course, but it's on MTS property. It took a lot of extensive work to clean this. That's only a portion of it. That extends probably for another quarter mile. One morning we came in for a detail, and one of our inspectors, this is San Diego River right behind the Crown Plaza Hotel, MTS property, and we just happened to walk in at the exact time of the beginning of this fire. So we were able to get fire department there just in time before it would have spread throughout the area. If you notice in this one, the golf clubs all over the area. They actually sneak into the golf course by cutting holes through our property fence. And this is some of the equipment that they steal. Once we're done with our detail, we'll usually, as a courtesy, gather up all the golf equipment, take it back to the golf course, and they'll try to connect it with the original owners if they can find it. This is Marina Linda Vista. Just as the trains start heading westbound out of the station, it's a bridge there, and this is that bridge area.
Yeah, I'm just showing you some. We probably have hundreds of photos of this. That these are in our stations in our right of way.
That's Barrio Logan. This is Sweetwater Flats, which is in between 24th Street and Bayfront E. Sweetwater Flats again.
And now this is Cactus Park, which I mentioned is in the unincorporated Lakeside area.
So Cactus Park was acquired during the Santee extension in the mid-90s as well. It's a 14-acre site. It's not as large as the Mission Valley site, but it's in the County of San Diego jurisdiction. And a number of years ago, we started working with the Sheriff's Department to start dealing with this site. We were working with the Sheriff's Department at this during the time that there was a potential kidnapping that was going to take place from the Little League fields. You can see them to the right of the property on this slide. It was something that was probably a good 8 to 10 years ago that this happened. So this site we've been actively working on for a number of years. We work with county parks as well as others to deal with how this property is maintained. It's east of Route 67 and north of Wildcat Canyon Road. There's a high school out there.
The area here is, again, stolen property from most of the businesses and residents in the area. But I could say that almost 100% of the individuals in here are meth or heroin addicts. So it's one of the dangers of this particular area is it's a shortcut for kids to get to El Capitan school. So that's one of our big concerns, is keeping it clean, keeping the individuals out of the area so that none of the children in the area become victims of any type of crime.
We have a lot more photos of that, but I think you were already getting the point just showing the river photos. You know, one of the big concerns for us when we have homeless people living in our on our property and our right-of-ways is they constantly cross our tracks. And it really creates a hazard for, you know, people on the trolley as well as the people crossing the tracks, because oftentimes people aren't paying attention. So it is concerning for us.
And with that, the recommendation is that the board authorize the CEO to execute the contract with Urban Core.
Thank you for that thorough presentation. Do you have some board members that have some questions? Councilmember Saf.
Thank you. And having been cleaning up the river for years, I've seen all of this. My question is, we have done huge cleanups, and we're all proud of ourselves. It's all clean. And then we go back 2 months later, and it's all back again. So those dots that you had, do you know that they're?
No, those dots are all every day something changes. And right. Captain Jackson can probably tell you that he's cleaned it out and seen it a couple days later.
Mm-hmm. You know? I think one of the differences now is there's a bigger collaboration now with all the stakeholders. The mayor's office is committed resources to this. We are working closely with the San Diego Police Department at Western Division and Eastern Division. We've got a letter on file with the Sheriff's Office for Cactus Park, so they can come on the property and arrest trespassers without our presence there. So I think the effort has stepped up, but it is going to require constant maintenance, yes.
So and one other point that you just made, like you said 100% are meth and heroin. I mean, I've seen, and the amount of stolen property is off the charts. I've seen so much of it, chop shops, all of these things being stolen from local retail stores, stolen packages, all that kind of stuff. But even though it's in the city limits and in your limits, this is also, as far as the meth and heroin, this is all part of, you know, health, human services, mental illness, all of that. So do we also have something going on with the county, health and human services? I don't know. Where do these people go?
Well, with the regard to what's happening in the river, that's actually, we do incorporate the San Diego Police Department, and they bring their hot teams. And so we kind of rely on them to assist in getting any kind of services that are needed. And then, as I mentioned, we are collaborating on the unincorporated area with the county.
Okay, I may have to leave a little early. I have an event, so I'm not going to make a motion in case I can't vote. So.
Thank you, Ms. Saff. Mr. Senke.
Thank you, Chair. Lori, I'll go ahead and make that motion for you because, and I think for what I've seen from this presentation today, is $140,000 enough? I mean, I want this to be a realistic problem-solving motion, and but if this is what you guys have determined is appropriate, that's good. And to follow up on Councilmember Zaff's question, I was curious what happened to the people too. Some of these photographs actually have people in them, and I was glad that she asked that, and I'm confident that we're doing compassionate things with these folks. As you say, they're all victims of drug abuse and maybe criminals, as you say, with all the stolen property. So hopefully we're handling them in an appropriate manner, compassionately, but also effectively from a judicial standpoint too. So
right, during every cleanup, we provide services cards. Captain Jackson said somebody finally accepted one there. I mean, this is a place where services are offered by the homeless outreach teams, and it's very rare that they accept the offer for housing and services.
As long as we're doing our level best to to get that going in the right direction. Thank you very much, Manny.
Thank you. Supervisor Cox.
Yeah, a couple of quick questions. To the extent that there is very limited or no development opportunities for this property, in both cases, I think in Mission Valley, there's probably some opportunity. I'm less familiar, although I've been on these playing fields. I'm just wondering if it wouldn't be best for us to even maybe give them away and have somebody else maintain them, or at least some portion of them, or you know, to try to relieve ourselves of some of the, if we don't really have any intention to be doing anything other than cleaning them up periodically, there's probably foundations, if not, you know, any private interest. And it seems to me we ought to be thinking of a long term rather than just a perpetual cleanup, because I suspect this problem's not going to go away anytime in the near future. That's number one. Number two, Urban Corps does a great job. I'm very familiar with the Urban Corps. I would ask, though, that in working with them, we require any of the youngsters that they're sending into these areas to have a Hep A vaccine before they do it. We've got to make that a requirement because it's really the potential. While everything seems to be on the decline, I think we have to treat it like it's still serious and make sure that the kids are protected. So if we can, you know, that some part of our agreement has to reflect that.
Thank you. That's a good reminder. And yes, thank you, Mr. And I apologize for calling you, Mr. Cox, by the way.
Just to respond to the property, so these are mitigation sites. So if, for instance, the San Diego River Foundation would probably take it over from us. In fact, there's been some talk about that. But you'd have to give them an endowment to have them maintain it for perpetuity. So that's the only thing. There is a cost associated, and I'm going to say it's in the millions rather than the hundred thousands.
Thank you. Mr. Diaz, do you have?
Yes, one question. When the city of San Diego put up the temporary shelters for the homeless, did we see a reduction in those encampments?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
No, the river is just a different group of homeless individuals. They like to be by themselves or with a group. They feel safer in the river than they do on the streets downtown. A lot own pets. That pet is like their best friend in the world, and they will not leave their pet. So it makes it difficult for them to get into shelters.
Mr. Alvarez.
Yeah, thank you for the report. And to that question, I think what's happened, at least in San Diego, is what, as we do more enforcement on the streets, people have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening is, while they were always at the river, as my colleague said, they are more and more finding their ways to the river and to areas like the ones in MTS's jurisdiction. And that's what's happening. I would suggest, and I heard that you're working with SDPD, which is great. Mm-hmm. That's good. To the extent we can have either joint agreements, because like you said, we have an agreement with Urban Core, other cities do. I mean, at some point, having all work together, since we're all doing the same thing, might make some sense, sort of longer term. I think this is a one-year contract, is that correct? 3 years. So I would just, for economies of scale, start having those conversations. And the second thing I would say about SDPD is, you know, they are, as my colleague said, they're trying to work with the individuals that are there, and you said the HOT team is there. Part of the HOT team, we need to have PERT team members there as well. The City of San Diego cannot continue to just afford to send them everywhere. I think this body should send a message to the County of San Diego that they need to help fund those teams more than they are today, so that we can have more of this enforcement and the compassionate follow-up that is needed for these individuals, because right now we are stretched really thin. We can only go so far, and I'm glad we're working collaboratively, and we should, but at some point we're going to have to bring a lot of those teams back into the City of San Diego's jurisdiction, which means they won't be serving our people at MTS, the needs for our teams at MTS. So I would highly suggest to the chairwoman that we consider requesting that the county really increase the efforts on the PERT teams to help support our HOT teams and be able to do more work with the increasing number of homeless who are now having deeper and deeper issues and who need to be seen by professionals, clinicians, and people who actually understand these issues. Thank you.
Definitely we'll look into it, and that's cool.
I agree with everything that our board has said, the recommendations, and the recommendations by Supervisor Roberts also. And I just want to say Urban Core is great. We've been using Urban Core since Sam Duran has been around. That was back in the 90s. And I'm glad that we're using that organization, especially with the kids. And it's a great recommendation that they get vaccinated or whatever they need to do to keep them safe. But I want to then second this motion if it hasn't been seconded.
Thank you. I believe the Urban Core is second. So thank you. And with that, I don't see any other board members. I'm going to call the question. Please all vote in favor of this motion. All those in favor? Thank you. All those against? Unanimously approved. Thank you. So we're going to move on to the Riverwalk real estate presentation.
So this is just a discussion. You actually just had a nice introduction to the property we own near the Riverwalk Golf Course and a part of the Riverwalk Golf Course. So we're just going to run through because there is a developer interested in managing development on this property. So I will turn it to Tim.
So this slide gives you an orientation of where the Riverwalk Golf Course is. You can see Fashion Valley Road is a north-south road that is right to the east of the Riverwalk property. Interstate 8 is on the bottom of the slide. The red line is our Mission Valley West trolley line, the green line that runs through there. You can see Friars Road on the north side. So
I just wanted to let you know that the as part of the Mission Valley community plan, the city approved the Levi Cushman specific plan in 1987, and that covers this Riverwalk golf course area. And this actually included a $2.6 million square feet office area, 1,000 hotel rooms, and 200,000 square feet of retail with 1,300 residential units. So it was a pretty intensive transit-oriented development. The development agreement expired, but the specific plan actually still remains in place. This is the conceptual plan for the specific plan, and you can see this is a Via Las Cumbres, which is a road that does not currently go through, but it was planned to go through by the city's traffic network. And then this shows you the intensity of the development in that plan. So in 1994, NTDB initiated condemnation with Levi Cushman entities to acquire the light rail easements through the golf course at the time, and to acquire a 5-acre parcel to be used for a larger mitigation site in Warner Ranch. The 1997 settlement included a lease of Riverwalk Golf Course, which currently we are now getting lease payments on, as well as a LRT station construction agreement. What that entailed was that we at MTDB, if the developments that ended up happening in this area warranted it, we as an entity, the board, could decide to put a new station there in the footprint of the specific plan. Do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, so this slide orients you to the Levi Cushman specific plan area, that's in red, and then the area in yellow, again, is the property that we talked about in the previous agenda item, and the area in blue that's outlined covers the lease area of the Riverwalk Golf Course. There are two holes of the golf course that are on that site. It's a 99-year lease. The first 20 years of the lease were free, and after 20 years, the golf course entity starts paying rent to us. It's 14 acres. There's a portion of it to the very west that is part of the Levi Cushman specific plan, but the remainder of it is not in the specific plan as it now exists.
And you can note that as well that the plan or the area for development is also restricted by the fact that this is part of the multiple habitat plan for the city of San Diego, as well as it's a very flood restricted area when the river floods.
Yeah, so this slide just kind of shows you where it is on a assessor's parcel map, and so we could move on, I think.
Go ahead.
So I already covered the top, and that talks about the golf course lease. The LRT station construction agreement, it was also part of the settlement. And when the developer got to a certain threshold, that would trigger when the time would be for consideration of the new trolley station. What that would then happen is that MTS would be given 4 years from the date of notification to consider whether or not a new station would be constructed. And in the current agreements, there is a cap on the developer's contribution to this station, which is only $500,000. That was in 1990s dollars, but it's still very, very low. So again, I also wanted to clarify that the developer, Hines, has not brought the project to the City Council. So for the board members that are on the City Council, you have not seen this yet, I don't believe.
So this is the conceptual plan for the development today. This is what we have been given so far. We did have a meeting with the Hines, who is the development entity, last week. They have not submitted the plans yet. They intend to do it either today or tomorrow or early next week, but we have not seen them. I did get some more detail, however, and that includes that there will be about 4,300 residential units north of the tracks, with about 430 of those units affordable, being developed through Wakeland. There is approximately 30,000 square feet of office and 75,000 square feet of retail right here near the station, which is this yellow box or rectangle here. The project will have to put 3 traffic signals added to Friars Road. And then there's approximately 50 parking spaces somewhere near the station that will be a joint use with the commercial at the station. So we did meet to discuss our property at the direction of the executive committee and how that property could fit into this development. But we were told that the issue of Via Las Cumbres has not been resolved, and that is the extension that I mentioned to you was included in the specific plan. And if you look at it, it goes right across our property. So it's hard to really have a substantive dialogue about what to do with our property until we know for sure what is the future of that road. I will mention to you that the Fashion Valley Road floods frequently. Therefore, there isn't really a lot of good options for north-south bus service, and we have a lot of bus service going into Fashion Valley Transit Center. So there is that, that the network of roads to improve it in this area is a benefit to our transit services, but it is would have a negative impact on how much we could build on our own property as well. So we do not yet have an idea of their traffic analysis to know whether or not they've reached the threshold as to whether or not to put a trolley stop here. And we haven't really seen enough detail yet to determine how many boardings we could expect from a trolley station here. And to give you some perspective, this is about a half mile from Fashion Valley Transit Center, and it's about a mile, or maybe a little less than a mile from Marina Linda Vista trolley station. So with that, we have some ideas for discussion for you. For instance, is the massing and the mix of uses in this development proposal really optimal for transit-oriented development? I mentioned to you that the specific plan actually had a much richer mix of office and commercial as well as residential, and those really tend to be the ones that drive a lot of ridership because you get people coming in to the property and going out from the property. And then we have to determine if a trolley station is warranted, as I mentioned. Other comparable Mission Valley stations, they average about 630 boardings, but they have significantly more retail and commercial uses than are anticipated in this proposal. Again, I mentioned the benefits from the extension of Via Las Cumbres for our transit services. There are multiple at-grade crossings proposed in this development scheme, and those are subject to Public Utilities Commission approval. They have not been willing to authorize those at-grade crossings anywhere at this point, so that still remains to be discussed. And then we have, at the direction of the executive committee, approached the developer with our property to see what possibly could be done at that location. So with that, I open it up for discussion or comment or questions.
Thank you, Sharon. Can you just repeat the housing amount that is being proposed?
Yes, 4,300 residential.
Okay, and the affordable housing?
And 430 of that is affordable.
430, okay, thank you. Any comments or questions from board members? Mr. Alvarez?
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I was not aware of the latest on that. So I think I understood you said none of MTS property at this time is being impacted?
So I can tell you that our property is not being included in their planning yet.
Okay.
And that's because right now we just approached them about it to say, hey, can you incorporate it?
Right.
But we also don't know what's happening, how much of this property needs to be taken for the road, if at all, if
okay.
the city decides to go through with that plan.
And what was their reaction to the, hey, we've got property and...
Oh, they were open to it.
Okay.
And we have a representative from the Levi Cushman Trust here if you have any specific questions for them.
Just one other comment on that.
Sure.
One of the problems with our property, the portion that's developable, is that it's landlocked. Okay, and so.
Problem for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if Hines did not want to use our property in this development for whatever reason, We'd like to be able to have the ability to access our property with the road infrastructure that's put in place.
Okay.
And that puts us in a position of having access to that property.
So given that I don't know all the history here, in the specific plan, it called for Las Cumbres to be developed, and yet it's not in this proposal. Isn't that triggered as a result of this development?
I would have to leave that up to the city. I haven't seen the traffic analysis, and I have not seen the plans, actual plans. This is the most that we've seen.
Okay. Who represents this group? Ah, that's why you're here.
Richard Ledford, for the record, I represent Hines and the Cushman Levi family.
Do you know, Mr. Ledford, if that road was part of the specific plan, was triggered as a result of the development or not?
Well, the answer is we don't know yet until we have our traffic study back, which is, of course, we're waiting for Sandag, like the city is. We're also waiting to find out what the community plan update is going to make it look like as well.
Okay.
We're convinced, based on ADTs, which isn't always used anymore, that the road isn't justified. And there's a small matter of crossing the river and the size of the road, the height of the road in order to cross the trolley tracks. So there are a lot of uncertain factors.
So I assume you would be concerned if the MTS property, which has been offered to be part of this development, would potentially trigger the development of that road. It would almost not be of interest to you.
I don't think we're concerned about that. I think that we're certainly open to discussion. Staff has been very good about meeting with us. We've started that dialogue. We're delighted to talk about what could be done, both in terms of access, in terms of development.
Yeah, I would strongly urge all of us to work on that to the extent we can utilize our underutilized assets from this agency, specifically to help address our housing crisis. And in this instance, as a public agency with affordable housing, that would be great. So I look forward to hearing more about this and other properties. I know that there's others that are interested in developing. Someone approached me randomly, reached out to me about the property on E Street. There's some interest in doing some development there as well. So I appreciate this update. It's very good to know. And as far as the other land that MTS owns, can we have a report on what our inventory is and like what it's zoned and what potentially could be built?
Yeah, we can definitely bring that back in future board meeting for sure.
I would
a more thorough presentation.
That'd be great.
And
perhaps thank you again for bringing this one. It's an important project in that community and probably will gain a lot of interest. So I appreciate being early in on this.
Thank you, Mr. Alvarez. I do have a question for the rep for the developer.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. In regards to the proposed at-grade rail crossing proposal, we've heard from the PUC that that's something that they're going to be opposing. Is there an alternative proposal?
No, there really isn't at this point, and we can't say we can't do it yet, although staff has been very honest and direct with us in terms of where the PUC is on recent grade crossings. But we're going to give it a shot and see what happens. So I don't want to say we've got alternatives until we've crossed that bridge. I will tell you that we've hired a professional consultant to help us with it. And again, MTS staff has been really good about kind of guiding where we need to go. And we started a conversation with Mr. Schumacher, who is the PUC's rep here in Southern California.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Just one question.
Sorry. That's cool.
Just one question. Are you bringing this to council, to our city council?
Council President, we are just submitting our full package to the city staff, planning department, sometime mid-month. I say mid-month because we're there now, so it could be this week, as Sharon said, or next week. So we're not quite there. That's why we haven't briefed any of your council members here from the city of San Diego. We will be, but we just spent the year and a half working in the community, because that's where the work has to be done. And we've dealt with issues like dealing with low-mod housing, on-site, the numbers, locations. So we're, as you know, we're plodding through the process, making sure our community is together with before we address the Planning Commission or Council with it.
Thank you, Mr. Lev.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts.
Yeah, you mentioned that we're they are required to give us sort of minimal help with a station if should we put one in. Are we required to put a station in, or could we decide that if there's a projected very limited use of the station with high overhead costs that we would pass on?
We actually have 4 years to determine whether we want to put a station there or not, right? But when is that date triggered, when the development is approved?
Well, when their ADT triggers the request and the notification, then we have 4 years to make that decision. But hopefully we'll be talking about a lot of that up front so that we can determine for the board more information regarding demographics, the ability of what the ridership may be, parking needs, locations, rail operations, costs, all that other stuff that's...
That was going to be my next question. So the we will be able to approve the location rather than just somebody designating it on a plan.
Well, right now the developer's proposal is where it is in yellow. The original agreement that we had with the Levi Cushman families designated several different locations that were to be acceptable to the board at that time, and this is one of them.
Okay. And it looks like there's a road on the south side of our tracks that I guess could serve all that housing if they couldn't get the on-grade crossings.
Correct. That's the way that the proposal shows it now. It's a cul-de-sac that would be able to be entered right into our property.
So we could have access, not very good access, but we could have access off of the end of that road.
Correct.
Okay. And that comes off of Fashion Valley Road without any, assuming you don't get grade crossings.
Correct.
Okay.
And I didn't mention to you, this that I'm circling here is actually where all the office, most of the office, there's a small portion of it up here, but most of that million square feet of office is down here, and that was required by the city because they felt like it needed to have an office component in Mission Valley. This is indicated, though, as a later stage, the last stage of the development process.
Okay. Thank you so much for that presentation, and some of the council members in the city of San Diego are looking forward in discussing this even further then. Thank you so much. This is just an informational item, so there's no need for direction. Moving on to report 46, operation budget status report for December 2017.
Good morning. We're here to present the budget status report for the first 6 months of the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2017. Starting with operating revenues, we typically do. Fare revenue is unfavorable for the first 6 months by $3.1 million or 6.5%. We are continuing to see ridership decline year over year. Ridership is down by almost 4% for the first 6 months of the year compared to last year, and we have been declining since peaking in FY15, so this is our third year of declines. It's not turning around at this point. We did do the Transit Optimization Plan, or TOP, in the fall, and a lot of those service changes have gone into place in January, and there'll be more in June and September. So we do hope that changes as we readjust our service to meet the needs of the riders. But at current, we are in favor on that line. We are making some of that revenue up in other operating revenue. We're $1.3 million favorable for the first 6 months of the year, and that is primarily within administration. It's energy credits on our biogas fuels, and it's also with interest income that's been higher than we projected. So in total, we are almost $2 million unfavorable in operating revenue with minus 3.3% variance. We're making some of that up on operating expenses, keeping those at budget. In total, we're $464,000 favorable budget, 0.3%. We do have some unfavorable variances within personnel based on our experiences and wages and fringe for the first 6 months of the year. We are favorable in purchase transportation. We are favorable primarily in paratransit volumes in the first half of the year over last year and what was expected, so that's driving some savings there. We're also favorable in outside services and energy. Energy primarily is with the natural gas prices have been favorable for the first 6 months of the year over what we initially planned, so that's a savings there. So when you roll things up, we have some favorable experience of expenses, but we are not making all that up. We do have a net operating deficit at this point of $1.4 million for the first 6 months. And we will be meeting with the Budget Development Committee next week to talk about balancing how we're going to balance mid-year at that point in time. Looking at our ongoing concerns, sales tax subsidy revenue is a large portion of our operating capital budgets. That is fairly on target. It might even come in a little bit ahead of target at this point in time, but those revenues appear to be safe at this point. State of California budget is our STA revenues, state transit assistance. That will be augmented by Senate Bill 1 revenues, and we should get our first payment of Senate Bill 1 revenues next week, if all goes according to plan. So we increased that projection to $21 million based on the Senate Bill 1 revenues that we'll start receiving soon. Passenger levels we talked about continues to trend unfavorably, and energy seems to be on target where we initially planned. A little bit favorable on CNG, but everything else is fairly close. And that concludes my presentation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for the presentation. Any questions from board members? Mr. Roberts.
Well, let me just help put some of this in perspective. We never like to have a deficit. I think all of us are aware that there's a declining ridership that's occurring not just here significantly in Los Angeles, but not just in Los Angeles. The metropolitan Boston area is now facing a deficit of $111 million, if I remember correctly. A pretty big number to deal with, so we're not doing so bad. And we got to keep an eye on this because things are changing pretty dramatically. We're seeing a lot of new car ownership, and people that have otherwise tended to be our riders are now finding jobs and with that opting to, they want to drive. There's some strong evidence of that.
Yeah, thank you for that. And just for the board members, we are working on a plan to be a bit more aggressive in improving our ridership. So that will be something that will be brought forward to the board members. Any other board member questions? Mr. Alvarez.
That just reminds me, when are we going to have the first review from the top? Is that like a quarterly basis or semi-annually? Because that'll give us an indication of ridership.
Yeah, I would say probably a quarter. We just put it in right. Late January for the first time. So we'll probably wait at least 3 months before we look at it.
Okay, thanks.
And while we're on the subject of updates, I understand there's a FAIR study being taken on in conjunction with SANDAG. What's the status on that one?
We are going to broach that subject with the Budget Development Committee next week, and then ultimately with the board, but it's not done yet.
Thank you. Any other questions related to the presentation? Thank you so much for the information, and we got some work to do. With that, moving on to the chair report, a couple of things from my side. I've been working very closely with Paul. We're going to be bringing forward a proposal to the budget in relation to how we're going to move forward and exploring the possibility of putting a measure in the future. That discussion is going to be brought to the budget first, and then will be brought to the board members and how that moves forward. And also, we do have an exciting event coming up. This is between all the agencies on the State Route 15. There's been a huge effort by the community for over 35 years to work on the center line, and we are officially wrapping that work. We're going to be having a ceremony Saturday, February 24th at 11 a.m. All of you are welcome to join the community to attend. So moving on to Chief Executive Officer report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Some of you may have received some correspondence over the past week that was critical of a letter that I wrote to CARB regarding the new innovative clean transit proposed regulation. So I just wanted to address that for you all. Contrary to that correspondence, I'm not against electric buses. In fact, our pilot is coming along very quickly. We've already got proposals in for the consultant to lay out the pilot. We're doing interviews right now. We might be able to get it to you by March. If not, it will be April for approval of that.
But coincident with that, we're already working on specifications for electric buses. We're reaching out to the industry manufacturers to try to find, quote unquote, piggyback opportunities where we can go into somebody else's contract and buy electric buses. We've assembled the team that's going to do the pilot internally, and they are on a pretty aggressive campaign to learn as much as they can about that. We also are reaching out to SDG&E, because buying the buses is one thing, getting the power to the sites and developing the infrastructure is another one. And I know the PUC got a proposal from SDG&E relative to this, and while it mentioned transit buses, there's nothing specific about transit buses. So we want to enter into that dialogue with them and see how they might be able to help you. The issue, and it relates back to just last month when you approved the legislative program, the primary intent of our letter was to talk about the fact that this is really an unfunded regulation and some of the impacts on it. We've been in discussions with CARB for the last 2.5 years on this one, but really since 2008 when CARB first talked about implementing zero emission buses. But the innovative clean transit proposed regulation just was announced at the beginning of January, and really was a significant departure from the 2.5 years of discussions that we've had with them. You know, specifically, implementation of zero emission buses 25% in 2020, going up to 50% in 2023, 75% by 2026, and 100% by 2029, all going for 100% implementation fleet-wide by 2040. What was most significant, two things that were significant also besides ramping up the percentages, is that all incentive funding was removed from the regulation. So right now there's an HPIV program that allows for $100,000 to $150,000 per vehicle to offset the cost. That's gone from it, and potentially cap and trade. And their rationale was for it, well, when we're trying to incentivize something in the industry, we provide money, but once it's a regulation, you have to just do it. So that's a problem for us. And something brand new, we have been talking about 40-foot buses and articulated buses. They expanded the regulation to be small buses, like our paratransit vehicles and our mini buses, as well as the over-the-road coaches. The problem with that is right now there are none of those vehicles. There's no electric vehicles that are on the market that are for either of those two categories. And the mini buses is especially important because those are only five-year vehicles. So, you know, I think we have, I don't know, 160, 170 paratransit vehicles. We'd have to be looking at a very rapid deployment of infrastructure in order to do that. So, you know, we certainly have some issues with the proposed regulation. We're working very closely with the California Transit Association and everybody else in the industry here in California to, and CARB has asked us for, for comment as well as potential alternative suggestions to that. So that was really the purpose of my letter to them.
Thank you for that report, and definitely the board gave direction to move forward with the pilot, and we're very much committed in doing so. So we're going to continue moving forward on that. And I do see the Mr. Roberts.
Yeah, just a follow up to Mr. Jablonski's comment. And I'm aware they don't have those small vehicles. Is it possible for us to be connecting with some of the major transit companies to talk about maybe jointly putting out some kind of a request to see if we can stimulate the development? I think it's likely that the future transit's going to be in those smaller vehicles rather than the big, especially the articulated buses. And I'm thinking, you know, I mean, here we're setting all the rules for something that may not even be necessary, but I see these smaller vehicles as playing a significant part, not just for paratransit, but in a whole host of things.
Yeah. My you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of CARB, but I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. By regulating their purchase, they're hoping to stimulate the market.
Yeah, and I was just thinking that we could maybe have discussions with other agencies, whereas a group, we might be able to, in addition to the regulatory effort that is being done, I'm familiar with that at CARB.
Yeah.
But I still think there may be some value in us linking up with other agencies and looking specifically at the smaller units.
Yeah, I can bring that up.
Okay.
Within the association.
I think it'd be very, very good to do that.
Thank you. So we do not have additional public comments. Our next meeting is scheduled for March 8th, 2018, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.